This is 105.5 Triple M, The Sound of Madison. I'm Jonathan Sutton, and I've just been handed a piece of paper with some shocking news on it. First of all, it says that John Cleese is still alive. I know. I can't believe it either.
Right.
Secondly,
it's a close call.
Yes, I can imagine. Secondly, it says he is coming to Madison. And third, he is actually calling into this radio program now, and I believe he's on the phone. Mr. Cleese, are you there?
I am indeed. I'm glad that the message got to you.
Okay, good. I'm glad that you're still alive, sir. It is an honor, in all seriousness, to talk to you. But I have to ask you, did you lose a bet to Eric Idle? Why the hell are you coming to Madison, Wisconsin, sir?
Well, somebody suggested it. And I'm doing a very, very short tour. I'm doing two shows in Cupertino, which is in California.
Yeah,
I've been there before. And I'm doing a show in Sacramento, which I like. And then I'm flying to Madison, and I'm not sure. Maybe I did something very discreditable in an earlier life. But I want to know, how cold is it going to be in November? Is this Canada cold, or...
That's the thing, sir. I know that I believe you now vacation extensively in Nevis, and it's a little colder here than it is there, even colder than California. Are you bringing gloves and mittens and a few sweaters, I hope?
Well, I'm having to plan, you see, because I'm coming from the warm through California. I'm going on to Nevis, as you correctly say, so I'm really wondering how I'm going to get through Madison in order to be able to actually fly to Nevis a couple of days later.
It may
be because
I
have a very short bucket list, and it is, there's only one thing on it, and that is the desire never to be cold again.
Well,
and I think that may be in danger, may it not?
I think you're right, unfortunately. Now, those of you not familiar with John Cleese have probably stopped listening to this interview by now, but I'll just say very briefly, of course, the crown jewels of the Cleese Empire would be Monty Python, A Fish Called Wanda, and for me and so many people, Fawlty Towers hold such a dear place in my heart. And I imagine, sir, that many times people probably come up to you like they do to rock stars regarding songs that have meant something to them, that Fawlty Towers probably people constantly tell you what an impact it had on their lives, right? You're probably used to that by now.
Well, I am, but I'm used to it in one sense. But when people come up, very simply, they just say, may I shake your hand and thank you for making me laugh all these years. It never happens without me getting a little warm glow somewhere where my heart used to be. And it makes you happy. It's very nice to know you made people laugh. When you learn that you don't make people laugh, you think, well, that's all right, because there's plenty that I do.
Absolutely.
And you also, as you get older, you realize that people's senses of humor are even more varied. So they're very, very different senses of humor. Sometimes when I'm showing a clip from a show on stage, and I'll look at the front row and the light that's coming from the screen, and I'll be able to see the first two or three rows. It's quite extraordinary how much there's variability. Some people roaring with laughter, and one or two of them looking at the screen as though it's a screening of Moby Dick in Finnish, you know? And you realize that there's vastly different reaction from all audiences at all times. And I think we miss that when we're in a theater, because we do tend to laugh at the same things. It's a slightly group reaction. But if you look at it under the microscope or in the light of the reflected light from the screen onto the audience, you realize that people laugh at quite different things.
This is very true. Now, I have to say, though, the tour that you're on is Why There Is No Hope Tour. And I have to say, I usually think of the British with the stiff upper lip, keep calm and carry on. But are you basically telling us all to just throw in the towel and screw it?
No. I think the trouble is that we always think that things should be better.
Mm-hmm.
We always think in the last century, for example, that there were times when things were much, much, much better. And of course, it simply isn't true. I mean, if you go to the last century, you have the First World War, which had more people killed than ever before. And just after that, you have the Great Slump, the Depression. and the rise of Hitler and Stalin to power. Then you have the Second World War, then you have the Cold War, then you have Vietnam. And every single decade is, in its own quiet way, a bit of a disaster. Occasionally you get one that isn't quite as disastrous as the others. You think that's really nice, but the norm is that the world doesn't work. And if you look at it now, with these extraordinary autocrats that we have around, starting, I suppose, with Putin and the Saudi Arabian royal prince or whatever title he has, and then you go to Erdogan and Netanyahu and the extraordinary rigidity of the Chinese who are now putting all the Muslims in small camps. You kind of look around and you say, you know, this is not an ideal place.
Agreed.
But then you look at it and you think, well, how much can I do about it? You see, you really can't do much about what's going on in China or Netanyahu building even more settlements. But what we can do is be nice to the people within our radius and just try to be paid. But I think the key to it all is try to stay calm, try to stay kind.
Right,
try to stay calm, try to be kind. Mm-hmm. And if we do that to the people around us, I think that's probably going to have a more beneficial effect in the long run than a lot of the activities that we all get involved in to change the world in a better way.
Right.
I do think that the elections that are coming up, the midterms, the most important elections anywhere in my lifetime, anywhere in the world, because I do think it's very important that we have leaders who accept that they are under the rule of law. And I think once that's been given up, as it clearly has, for example, in Russia, then I think that's very sad, but I don't know if I knew much about it, so I'm just going to be very nice to my cat.
Right, exactly. Now, I know that you've said before, in some places, people don't get irony. And many times you've referenced like the Middle West or Texas. But we here in Madison do get irony. Although this state went to Donald Trump in the election, the little place you're coming to, Madison, which I imagine you've never even been to Wisconsin before, correct? Have you been here before?
Oh, I've been to Wisconsin before. Oh, yes.
Really?
Yes, several times.
Really? Okay.
Yes,
well,
but I get my geography of the Great Lakes is not as precise as it should be. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, yes.
There are parts of America, and I know pretty much where the boundaries are between the states, and then I get, for example, up to New England, and I can never quite figure out which bits of New Hampshire, which bits of Maine. You
it doesn't
what I
matter.
Mean?
They're all the same.
But once I get around the Great Lakes, and particularly once I'm away from Lake Michigan, then I have a little problem about exactly who's where. But I know that that's an area that's famous for its universities, and there's a large book reading public up there, and they're intelligent and they have a good sense of irony. Whereas I think not so much in Texas. It's extraordinary in Texas how much they like Python. I was quite surprised, but they love us. But I think in places like Iowa, there are not so many people who really understand irony. They think that when you say something, that the exact meaning of the words is exactly what you are meaning to say. And that, of course, is not true where there is irony. And I think it's also one of the reasons why in the Bible Belt there's a lot of people who say that the Bible should be interpreted literally, which, given that Jesus taught in parables, is a very surprising conclusion.
Exactly, exactly. You know what Iowa stands for? You probably don't. Iowa stands for Idiots Out Wandering Around, just so you know. That's how I came up with the name. So I do have to ask you, do you still write, like Jerry Seinfeld has talked about how he tries to write every day, and when, you know, early on in his career, he would get up every day and literally write. Did you work that way or work that way ever?
I would like to work that way, but I seem to spend an enormous amount of time making arrangements. One of the reasons that I'm going to be based in Nevis, because I think once I get there and I get a few things sorted out, I'm going to have to be able to spend a lot of time writing. And I think, although I'm quite a good actor in a limited range of roles, I think what I'm really good at is writing. I'm very proud of one or two of the things I've written, and I want to do a lot more, because I think this is a useful time, actually, to make good jokes about what's going on in the world.
Absolutely. We're talking to John Cleese today, who is coming to Madison. The show is Why There Is No Hope. It's happening November 18th. And what's really fun about the show is you are actually going to take questions from the audience, and the stranger, the better, right? There's no limits on what
they're doing. Oh, yeah. The ruder, more penetrating, and the more personally insulting they are, the better. Because the worst questions are sort of California, and almost cliche, so wonderful. What can we do to be as half as wonderful as
right.
you? And what I like is when people say, why can't you stay married like ordinary people do? You know, that sort of question.
Well, the question I had with that, studying on your past wives, is the fact that perhaps they were all American. Do you think that was the problem?
Well, the first three were.
Right.
But
Jennifer was raised in America.
I am married to at the moment, and that's a very bad way of phrasing it from her point of view. So I would say my fourth and final wife.
Right.
Is English, but the interesting thing is she spent very little of her life in England.
She was in America, right?
On an island on the Thames called the Isle of Sheppey, but she went to South Africa at the age of three, and then she went on to, hang on a moment, she went on to New Zealand, then she went and spent 6 years, her teenage years, in Madrid, and finished up in Delaware.
Okay.
So very near D.C. And she went to school there and worked in America for a time and didn't come back to England until she was 22. So she had 19 years out of the U.K. And there's something about her that people sense that she's not quite English, and that's the reason she is English.
Mm-hmm.
I think she has Armenian blood.
Wow.
And there's also a sort of rumor around that her father was from Burma. And she does have the most beautiful cheekbones and slightly slinky feline eyes. I think she's amazingly beautiful. So if there's no Burmese in her, there's maybe some Burmese cat.
Something that I saw, we're talking to John Cleese. He's coming here to Madison soon, November 18th. And I drew the shortest straw and will actually be there to help with the question and answer. So I look forward to meeting you in person. But
why don't you slip one of your own questions in?
Yes, I will try my best. But I do have, I know we're running out of time soon, but I had read that the Fawlty Towers Hotel, where I'm assuming the inspiration for it, was actually knocked down a few years ago. Is that right?
You're quite right. It was knocked down, and I was rather sad about that. And the actual hotel that we used to shoot at when we were making the TV series burned down. So both the real Fawlty Towers and the fictional Fawlty Towers are no more.
I'm so sorry, but I do have to, if I can share, to give you that warm, fuzzy feeling that when I was just 7 years old, I grew up in Chicago. My father said to me, I want you to watch this show with me one night. And it's on PBS, the public broadcasting show. It's on late. It's on at 10:30, but I'm going to let you stay up. And we watched Gourmet Dinner together from Fawlty Towers. That was the first one I saw. And you hitting the car with the stick was just such a magical moment that we shared together, and it inspired us to create our own bed and breakfast, which did not go well, and I then was homeless for 9.5 years. So screw you. No, I'm kidding. The last part, of course, is fake, but the beginning is true, that was just such a bonding moment for me and my dad, and thank you. Thank you for that.
I'm very happy. I love it when I hear about parents laughing with children, and it happens naturally more with Fawlty Towers than it does with Monty Python, because Fawlty Towers is, in a way, it's very primitive. It's all kids understand it when they're seven, because it's all about who's frightened of whom.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? It's very simple, whereas Python only appeals to a much older group because it's more, a little bit more, what's the word, abstract.
Right.
But in Fawlty Towers, it's just a question of who's going to hit whom, and that's sort of like Chaplin, that makes it universal.
Yes, it is fantastic. Well, sir, it is an honor to talk to you. I'm so excited to meet you come November 18th, unless you chicken out when you see the weather is a bit chilly. I hope you'll push through and still come.
Well, we need to point out how much warmer people will be if instead of hanging around the streets, they're sitting in a nice warm theater.
You're correct, sir. Very good. All right. Well, we will see you in a few weeks. Bring earmuffs.
Super.
John Cleese, thank you
nice
so much.
Nice to talk to you. Look forward to meeting
you. You too.
Thank you, Jonathan.